And today, we celebrate a very special anniversary, because this day, 40 years ago, Swedish band ABBA were waking up to a whole new world after their success at the Eurovision. Took the world by storm with Waterloo, beating Ireland's entry from Tina Reynolds into an honourable seventh place. And how long ago it all seems now. Can you believe it? Babies born in 1974 include Ryan Tuberty, Keith Duffy, Gráinne Scheuga and Andrea Carr. It was the year that Cathal Ó Dáilg became the fifth president of Ireland. The army provided transport for the public as Dublin Bus went on strike for 9 weeks. And Paris Court was destroyed by a fire. In sport, West Germany beat Holland 2-1 in the World Cup final. Kilkenny beat Limerick in the All-Ireland hurling final. And Dublin beat Galway in the football, beginning the glory days for Dublin football. A status quo thundered up the charts. Rock legend Rory Gallagher was quietly making an international name for himself. In the US, Richard Nixon fought the Watergate scandal, but in the face of certain impeachment, ended up being the first president to resign his office. Heiress Patty Hearst, who had been kidnapped by the SLA, appeared on tape, saying she didn't want to leave the revolutionary group. 10 weeks after the kidnapping, she was caught with them trying to raid a bank. These were the grim days of the Troubles, and in May, loyalists exploded 3 car bombs in Dublin and another in Monaghan, resulting in a total of 33 deaths. On the 5th of October, 2 no-warning bombs were set off by the IRA in 2 Guildford pubs where 5 people died. 4 were convicted for the offence and served 15 years before being proved innocent. On the 21st of November, the IRA blew up 2 pubs in Birmingham, killing 21. 6 men were convicted and served 16 years for crimes they didn't commit.
I closed my eyes, drew back the curtain to see for certain what I thought.
The 70s was also the era of miniskirts and bell-bottoms, tank tops and platforms. And the musical Joseph and His Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat was the biggest stage hit of the year in Dublin. The cast included a young comedian, Brendan Grace, and gave Tony Kenny one of his biggest hits.
Any dream will do.
Memorable songs from the Eurovision in 1974 included Olivia Newton-John's entry for the UK. Netherlands.
See a star, a brand new star. It's right there twinkling in your eyes. I see your face, a happy face. It's like a mirror of my mind.
But in Brighton, in England's sunny southeast, it was all about one band, which exploded into our collective consciousness on the 6th of April, 1974. Agnetha, Frida, Benny and Bjorn were ABBA.
Waterloo,
Yes, indeed. Reeling in the years here on the Mooney Show. It might be radio, but visually, that script by Anna was just wonderful. Gave us great memories. And joining me now is a man who's as familiar with the music of ABBA as I am with the ins and outs of Claire Hurling. Now, who wrote this script, I wonder? Andy O'Callaghan is a musician, keyboards player, arranger, composer and conductor. He has played keyboards at 5 Eurovision Song Contests held in Dublin, and he's the conductor and arranger of an annual ABBA tribute show performed with the RTE Concert Orchestra. Andy, lovely to meet you. And thank you for coming into the studio.
Thank you.
Let me start by asking about the song Waterloo. What's it all about? It's obviously not a historical song about the defeat of Napoleon at Waterloo. Am I right?
It isn't. In fact, while some people attribute kind of some undertones to the lyrics, I don't think really that it travels too far from the standard Eurovision song that was there prior to 1984, which would have been the romantic ballad. Mm. Somebody sitting down or perhaps standing up, giving a delivery of just a solo artist delivering a simple song, perhaps about love. When we look back even to our contestants in the previous years from Ireland, you had Sean Dunphy, you had Dickie, Butch Moore, even Dana. A kind of a simple presentation of a love song.
It was about the song, and it was a more ballady, really.
Absolutely.
Wasn't it?
It was. They were gentler, quieter songs, and that all changed in 1974. Inherently, the actual lyric in the song, if you leave out the kind of Napoleon bits, is basically a girl saying, "Look, I've tried to resist you for a certain amount of time, but you've won me over with your charms, and you are the winner."
It's a bit like Brenda and myself.
It is a bit.
Yeah, a bit.
It is, yeah. It's me singing, "You're My Waterloo, Martin." But it's funny, as we were listening to all those songs coming in there, I was going, I don't remember anything. I'm too young. I'm far too young. But we did remember them when we were singing along. Were you there, Andy, on the night that they won?
Not, which, in 74?
Yeah.
No, not in 74,
no.
I know, no. I'm even a little bit young now for that. I was around and I was watching, but I'm nearly as young as Ryan Tubridy, but not quite, you know.
So in terms of the orchestra, Andy, and in terms of the constructs you do, tell me a little bit about that.
OK, well, we do a number of shows with the RTE Concert Orchestra and a group of singers, which I've put together for the last few years, called the Celebration Singers. And we have 5 shows at the moment, one of which is ABBA. There's a Bee Gees, ABBA, Disco Inferno, Elton John, and we're doing one in May, which is Barry Manilow, Copacabana, the music of Barry Manilow.
I have to admit, Andy, I love all of this.
All of these shows, they're all of a certain vintage and era. And basically, the kind of rule and all in picking the material for the shows is that people will get up, have a dance, enjoy themselves, step out of their seats, and basically that's it. So obviously, ABBA and Bee Gees and the others fulfill those requirements pretty.
And the audience for these shows, Andy, is it principally people who were around during the ABBA days?
Does
it have a wider appeal?
There would be a large group of people who would be, say, 50 plus or whatever. But obviously they have also brought now their kids and their kids and their friends or whatever. And the music of ABBA is totally appealing to all age groups. It has, transcended the actual era that it was actually performed first in, and is just as popular today as ever. I sometimes do the odd wedding, play in the odd wedding group, and when we're finished, the DJ kicks in and I can guarantee you the first song is going to be either Mamma Mia or Dancing Queen. That's it.
It's a floor filler. Isn't that how you describe it? A floor filler, yeah.
Absolutely.
But I or even a group on a night out, a group of girls. I mean, hardly ever will an ABBA song not be sung. You know, I mean, somebody will do a Dancing Queen, then it'll go into I Will Survive or whatever, other songs will come in. But it does transcend, as you said, the generations, and kids love them now because the likes of Glee and all those cool programmes are reinventing a lot of the ABBA songs. Would you agree with that, Andy?
Of course, and I mean, they've had the film lately, Mamma Mia itself, which again just reinvigorated all the old songs, and they're back in the public consciousness again.
And do you think, Andy, that ABBA were underrated back then and more rated now? Or what's your judgment from a musical professional point of view?
I wouldn't think that they were underrated then. Their success for a Swedish group, first of all, they conquered Europe, the States, Australia. They were absolutely huge. The film, ABBA, the movie at the time, I remember, was basically just a reincarnation of a tour that they did in the States, you know. But I mean, phenomenal reaction. So they were huge then. One of the things people say, you know, how come we don't kind of hear so much from them as opposed to their music today? They obviously had a certain kind of hiatus in their personal relationships due to the fact that they were both married, the two couples.
Yes.
And they split up. And I believe that Anita went through a phase definitely of withdrawing from the music business, which probably I'd say that she was just inundated with the success that they had in America and stuff like that. So they haven't been together as a group. Whereas a lot of other artists, Paul McCartney, etc., are still performing. So we'd be more aware of them still in the melting pot, if you like, today. Whereas ABBA have, there's been a couple of attempts to put it back together, but it never actually happened. So
there'll be some headline if they decide to come back.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And, you know, they had some amazing B-sides as well. Like the B-side to Waterloo, if I remember correctly, was Honey, Honey. Do you remember that, Brenda?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Honey, Honey, you are my candy girl.
Thank you. Okay. No, but we know all the songs. They're just wonderful. Like all the, you know, the D'Angelo's. Remember that one, High on a Mountain in Mexico? Mm. They were fantastic.
And Chiquitita.
Chiquitita.
Oh, I love Chiquitita.
Fernando. Is that the one you're remember?
Yeah.
Fernando, yeah.
I thought it was Angelo, no.
Angelo was Brotherhood of Man. Another Euro.
Another kind of group. Yeah, I'm cross-referencing.
I think
here.
I might have had the wrong Honey, Honey. So let's go to the real Honey, Honey. And here on the Mooney Show, we're opening our telephone lines and indeed our text lines 51551 because we want you to pick your favourite ABBA song. And indeed, we'll make every effort to play it here for you. So do text us your favourite song and maybe you might even give us the reason why it is your favourite song. Does it give you a special memory or bring you back in time? And a little known fact about Waterloo. We almost didn't have it, in fact, in the Eurovision because ABBA were very close to choosing another song, Hasta Mañana. Let's have a listen to what that could have been like.
I just don't know, but still my love for you.
Yes, indeed. That in turn turned out to be a hit as well, Hasta Mañana. But back in the days when the band were huge, we also had the punk phenomenon, didn't we, Andy, of the 70s. So ABBA weren't that cool, maybe.
Punk was actually probably a reaction to the phenomenon which ABBA started in 74, in as much as if you could say that disco was starting to appear 74, 75 and still existed as the main musical phenomenon through to about 78, 79. And it was in 79 that punk as a kind of an alternative started to really develop a negative reaction to the like costumery and sophistication, if you like, of the music or whatever, of the disco era or whatever, where back to banging out three chords on the guitar and shouting was a more honest
yes.
presentation, as they would have thought.
And you know what I found amazing, Andy, was that Waterloo reached the top 10 in Australia, Canada, New Zealand, Rhodesia and the United States. But it didn't get to number one in Sweden.
No, not in Sweden. It was number one in Ireland. Again, I don't know. I mean, whether they were even initially accepted in Sweden as much as they were by Europe. I know that we often talk of the kind of the extra member or the fifth member in this case. And there was very much a fifth member in ABBA who was a guy called Stig Anderson, who was their manager. And in fact, co-wrote quite a few of the songs. If you see some of the songs that say Anderson. Ulvaeus Anderson, he is the other Anderson in the actual pack or whatever. But he had, I think, a fair bit of clout in the music industry, even in 74, and had prepared assiduously for ABBA to win in Brighton. He had an album and he had a single printed and ready to go. And as soon as they actually won the contest, whereas for a lot of the other acts, there'd be a delay of 2 or 3 weeks while they got the machine in motion. He was ready to go. You know?
That was a key factor, really, wasn't it? I mean, he was ready for them the year before, as you say. So, I mean, this guy had a vision and was very confident, because I think the betting in Waterloo, if I remember correctly, was 20 to 1. But he had a bet on it. He was that confident. It was an outside.
Yeah. The previous year, they had entered the Eurovision as well with Ring Ring. And it was written in Swedish.
Mm.
And he got Neil Sedaka and Phil Cody, who were American two brill building writers in New York, to write the English lyric for that song. So, I mean, again, he was even thinking the year before, if this hits, I want like a song with a meaningful English lyric to be available for the English speaking. So, I mean, he was definitely thinking very much ahead, even in 74. And I would say that a large part of their success over the years would have been down to Stig. I met him once. I have a very close association through the years with the Eurovision. I was playing. I started off in 1974 as a professional musician on the 17th of May, which you mentioned in the earlier report there about the Dublin bombings. That was my first day to do a gig. And I was in Bus Aris. I'm sorry, I digress a little bit.
That's
here.
Okay.
But I was sitting in Bus Aris waiting to get a lift. I was playing for the summer with Anna McGoldrick. That was my first gig. And I'm sitting there with my accordion, right?
Yeah.
In Bus Aris waiting for the pickup. And I hear kaboom, kaboom. And it's Talbot Street and Parnell Street going off. So this, anyway, I know I digress, but anyway, that was my first evening as a pro musician. So I spent 3 years then in Dublin. I joined the Swarbricks. Now, the Swarbricks
Tommy
represented
and Jimmy.
Ireland.
Tommy and Jimmy.
They represented Ireland twice in the Eurovision.
Mm-hmm. From Mullingar.
Mullingar.
Yeah.
I left them. I joined Johnny Logan. The next thing, Johnny Logan wins the Eurovision. And I was in The Hague with Johnny for the actual time that he won with What's Another Year, Shea Healy song. And I met Stig Anderson there. So he was a piece of work, Stig. He had an act who was the Swedish entry that year in the Eurovision, and his publicity machine and everything like that. I'd say Louis might have modelled himself to some extent on Stig.
Stig,
you know?
Let me bring you back to being in Bus Aris, because there's a little bit of history there. That must have been a frightening moment when you heard
Absolutely.
These explosions.
Yep.
What did you do?
Well, I mean, all bets were off in terms of like traffic and everything like that or whatever. But I did eventually manage to actually call with no mobiles or anything like that. So I had to find a phone or whatever somewhere. And Mick Nolan, who was Anna's husband, was supposed to collect me. I got in touch and I walked over the south side. not realising that there had been an actual third bomb or whatever had gone off in South Leinster Street in Dublin as well. That day. Oh. Anyway, I suppose we digress somewhat from ABBA. But that was the day that was in it. And
I presume the gig was cancelled.
No, we went to Clonmel and we did the gig. Yeah,
very good. Yeah. Now, just a little bit, since I'm dealing with you yourself, because you've played in five Eurovisions here in Dublin and in Mill Street.
And Mill Street, four in Dublin and one in Mill Street.
Yeah. What's your most outstanding? I mean, was it Celine Dion winning here?
No, because at the time, she was a fantastic singer and we were aware of that, let's say, in the orchestra and that, but she was unknown. So no, absolutely. I think Riverdance as an event, just to be there and to see it kind of happening or whatever, was a phenomenal event. And to see, at that stage, we were kind of almost vintage, used to doing the Eurovision. That would have been the third one or fourth one. But to see the audience reaction, which was absolutely instantaneous and huge to that, was fantastic. Hair on the back of the neck kind of time.
Let me just go back to ABBA and Waterloo, because, you know, you look at Cliff Richard, congratulations, and Boom Bang A Bang, I think, by Lulu. They all, as you mentioned earlier, they had a certain style, although they might have been fast or slow or whatever.
Yeah.
So Waterloo's arrival did actually was an oasis. It was something very different.
Completely. Just as I was saying earlier about the song, as I say, the basis is still a basic kind of love song, if you like, or I Surrender to Your Charms, etc. But they couched it then in the whole Napoleonic element or whatever, that view in it, which was a breath of fresh air, hadn't been done before. Let's completely turn it on its head and introduce something not related to a love lyric, you know. And that, I think people were attracted to that. Their outfits, their dance, the shuffle arrangement, everything like about the song was new, I would say, in comparison.
And wasn't it true at the time that you had to sing your own song from the country that you were from in the language?
Not actually in 1974.
That was an exception, wasn't it?
There was for a year or two, they changed the rules so that you could sing in English, okay? But then they reintroduced the rule. I shouldn't say in English, I'd say in whatever language you actually chose to sing in. But then they reverted to you had to sing in your national language until maybe about 2000. And then they reverted to change that rule again. Effectively, I suppose it was English would have been the language that other than their own national language would be the one. That
because English is the language really of a pop song, isn't it? More so than anything else.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's an interesting fact about Waterloo. It's only one of three Eurovision winners to become top 40 hits in America. Do you know the other two?
Eurovision winners.
Hmm. You want to know
We need Paul G here.
We do need Paul G.
Well, I believe
the clock is ticking.
99 Red Balloons. No, that wasn't.
No.
I was going to say. A Little Piece. No, that didn't make it in America.
No, that didn't make it in America. No.
The Norwegian guy.
Well, give me a year.
1958 was one.
Oh, my God.
And 1976 was the other. 76. In 1958, it was Dominique Madugna. I hope I cannot pronounce Valère. And Brotherhood of Man.
Kisses for Me,
1976.
Was the number one in the States.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't realise that.
That sounds it made
the top 40, not a number one.
Oh,
the top 40.
Right, yeah. Okay.
Andy, you know the two lead vocalists are two ladies from ABBA, right? When they sing together, have they good harmonies? Because you'd be looking at this from a different perspective, say, than the rest of us. We all enjoy kind of singing along and that. But were they exceptionally talented? Do you know what I'm trying to get
very,
at? Or were they just good singers?
They had very, very... their voices suited each other down to the ground. Anita would be a soprano, Anna Fried a mezzo soprano, but she could actually sing a falsetto. She could sing just as high as Anita, but Anita's sound was very clean, thin kind of sound, and it cut through. Again, another really important member of the whole team was a fella called Michael Tretto, who was the sound engineer for ABBA, and he would have based his vocal technique would have been on the based on Phil Spector, Wall of Sound in the States, who would produce the Bee Gees and stuff like that or whatever in the States. So there would be multi-layering of vocal harmonies, all done by the girls. And they were very, very proficient in their musical awareness and knowledge and everything like that, and were well able to understand what was going on in the studio, you know. So.
In 2005, at the 50th anniversary of Eurovision, Waterloo was voted the best Eurovision song of all time. Would you concur with that, Andy?
I would. I spoke to Olin this morning, who, when we were talking about this, and I said, well, look, I have a couple. For me, there would be, like, with What's Another Year, like, that personally, that had a huge kind of effect. I think Niamh Kavanagh's In Your Eyes would be another of my favourite songs from the Eurovision. But, yeah, I would agree, Waterloo would be very much up there. It's a pity. I don't know whether this is an age thing or whatever, but in the last, is it maybe about 18 years, in a sense, almost since the last time that it was here, round about that run of songs here, finishing off with the Eimear Quinn, which was the last Irish win, The Voice. I mean, I'm not saying gone off the Eurovision, but I don't know that it isn't past to some extent its sell-by date, in as much as the winning songs don't go on to have a very successful hit status or whatever sales. There's been a couple in the last couple of years, maybe, but a lot of them in there were definitely people, I think, were kind of saying, what's the point in having this contest any longer?
Well, there was a great point in 1974 because, Andy, two single teachers went on a school tour to Ostend in April 1974. They watched the contest with students. They're now married for 38 years, Tony and Mary, who just text us in. There'll be more on ABBA here on The Mooney Show after the break. You're listening to The Mooney Show here on RT Radio 1. Marty Morrissey with you today. And to this particular show, we're celebrating the 40th anniversary of ABBA winning the Eurovision Song Contest, which is actually 40 years and a day, because on the 6th of April 1974, ABBA won the Eurovision Song Contest by 6 points. And over the years, of course, there are huge memories. But above all else, there are always great songs. Yes, indeed. Gimme, 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 A Man After Midnight, one of ABBA's great hits. Well, platform boots, sequin jumpsuits, flared dungarees, tiny tunics and glittering hot pants. ABBA could never be described as shrinking violets when it came to style, and satin seems to have been their material of choice. To this day, their costumes are emulated at fancy dress parties around the world by wannabe Bennies, Bjorns, Annefrids and Agnetas. But if you want to see the originals, well, you'll have to travel to Stockholm in Sweden, where the costumes are on display in ABBA, the museum. Well, Ing-Marie Halling is the curator there, as well as being ABBA's former wardrobe supervisor. And she joins me on the line now from the UK. Good afternoon, Ing-Marie.
Hello there.
Hello, and welcome to The Mooney Show.
Thank you. Pleasure.
We're celebrating ABBA's success, which I know you were an integral part of, 40 years ago, yesterday to be very precise. But I believe there were big celebrations of the 40th Waterloo anniversary yesterday in the ABBA Museum in Stockholm.
Yes, we had a really great day at the museum. And I believe that we did a lot of good stuff, mainly for families and kids. Of course, the fans were traveling there from Australia and everywhere also. But it was a good day with the ABBA, the choir, doing their first performance ever.
And can you...
And with Benny on the keyboards.
Benny was there?
Yeah, he played in the last song. Yeah.
Can you remember what you were doing when ABBA won with Waterloo in 1974?
Well, right now I have to disappoint you a bit because I didn't work with the band in 74. I started when they first traveled to Australia for their first transatlantic tour. So in 74, I was actually listening a lot to Jeff Beck and Frank Zappa and things like that. But I knew them, and my boyfriend was playing guitar with ABBA at the time, so I was fully aware of them and their success at the time.
And what was it like to be not involved with them? I know you got involved in 1977, I think it was, but to be in Sweden that night, to see your country win the Eurovision Song Contest and to see this new group emerging. We've been discussing the way the songs were over the previous decades. Here were Waterloo, here were ABBA with a brand new style.
Well, you know, the song contest at that time, for those who have seen it back in the days, it was quite a stiff upper lip sort of event with tuxedos and polite people sitting there in black long dresses and things. So it's a big difference from today. So for them to see this glam rock outfits, these four persons coming out on the stage doing an up-tempo song, was quite a big change from what it had been up till then. So I would say that for us in Sweden, some of us actually could see that this was a big breakthrough for Swedish music out in the world, which was absolutely right.
So how did you get involved with the band? How did that come about?
Yeah, it came about that my boyfriend, Lasse Welander, was playing guitar with the band, and I joined them for some shows and got to know the Frida and Agneta and Björn and Benny. And I was at that time working as a makeup artist for a theater company in Stockholm. So when Frida realized that she and Agneta needed help backstage on their first tour, transatlantic tour, she knew what I was doing exactly just that. So she called me and asked if I wanted to join. And I was at that time planning to go to, as it was called then, the Soviet Union with a ballet company. But I decided that it was much more fun to go to Australia.
I wouldn't blame you for that.
So that's a good choice.
Yeah, very good choice. Well done to you. So what was it like working with ABBA? What were they like to work with? What were they like to work with?
Well, I would say that after working with ABBA, I've been working with a lot of actors and artists, and it has never been so easy as it was with ABBA, because they're extremely easygoing persons and very down to earth and very, you know, if something is broken or something is lost, it's not a big deal, as long as they can perform and do the best for the audience. So it was kind of more of a vacation-like situation than a proper job, I would say.
Putting Marie, what was the reaction of Frida when her wig fell off?
Well, you know, that's one of the things that I sort of believe that this would give me a flight ticket home afterwards, but no, she, you know, that's how she is. She just picks it up and starts laughing and put it on again and keep on dancing, because it's, you know, that's how she does it.
She's a professional.
No hard feelings. Yeah. Well, there's many professionals that would be really upset and annoyed, but she doesn't.
And
none of them do.
Ing-Marie, who designed the flamboyant costumes? And is it true that back in the day, the costumes were actually laughed at?
No, it's not true. Because if you take the costumes they wore on Waterloo in Brighton, 74, they were made by a woman in Stockholm called Karin. And she had a great boutique where it was top of the line to buy costumes there, and Frida saw the costumes in the window and with some alterations, that was their outfit. So that's what I think, that if you would take Lady Gaga's costumes today and show them for audience in 40 years, they would laugh as much today, then as they do today. So you know, everything has its time.
Now, tell me this, Ing-Marie. Is it true that one of the reasons the costumes were so flamboyant was so that that actually they could be deducted against tax? That couldn't be true, could it?
I heard about this. I think that's something Bjorn said in an interview quite recently. I don't think he actually meant that. Mm. I think that was more of a, you know, I don't know,
an off the
joke
cuff
or something.
Yeah, no. So in your recent...
It was not deductible.
It was not deductible. Okay, well, that's cleared up at least. No. And in your recent book, Ing-Marie, you said that it was politically incorrect to listen to ABBA. What do you mean by that?
Well, in the 70s, we had a very strong left-wing movement in Sweden. And it was sort of a cultural elite, if I should explain it that way. And for them, this was commercial crap music. And it wouldn't last so long. That's what they said. But, you know, people, basic people, people out in the street, my friends and families back where I was living, they love ABBA. So, you know, that's how it is. A little clique of persons that are sounding. You could actually hear them quite loud, but that was not the truth when it came to people in the streets.
But you had a front seat as such because you went to Australia with ABBA and I understand you got quite a reception there.
It was crazy. But the thing is that none of us, neither the musicians or the crew, the Swedish crew, had seen anything like that because that was the first Swedish band doing that kind of a tour. So we were stunned and we were, you know, didn't really understand what was happening because of the crowd, the masses standing by the road from the airport and all the way into the city in Melbourne. That was quite crazy, I would say. I mean, the guys who were in our crew from US or England that are touring with Stones and Rod Stewart and whatever at that time, they were used to this, but we were not. So it was quite crazy.
Andy O'Callaghan joins us in the studio, Ing-Marie, and he's a wonderful musician and conductor and has played in five Eurovision Song Contest ones here in Dublin. He'd like to ask you a question.
Hi, Ing-Marie, and nice to talk to you.
Hi there.
How are you? I'm just aware that Anita, I think, was the most reclusive member of the four singers for a number of years. Now, am I correct in saying that she is just in the process of releasing a new album? Are you aware of that?
Well, I think the last one, it came out last year.
Yeah.
And maybe she, I don't know, I haven't asked her, but, you know, she's kind of, she says things when it's about to happen.
Okay.
So she keeps it for herself until she's safe with the talking about it.
So,
but I know that she loved doing the last record.
Okay.
She loved singing again.
So my ultimate question is, if she was the one who maybe was denying the possibility of a get-together for ABBA again because she wasn't up to that recording, do you think that the fact that she is back in the music business, if you like, possibly might mean that we might see the foursome back together again ever? What's your take?
Well, I would say definitely no. I wish I would say yes. I could say yes because I would love them to go back for doing four really heavy concerts and giving all the money away for charity. I would love that. But I don't think that will happen, no.
Okay.
They're quite fine with their lives today.
And just go back in time, in terms of obviously you were up close and personal with ABBA, but Andy has given the musical side and we've given the fan side. But from your perspective, why do you think ABBA were so good? What made them?
Well, this is a million-dollar question. And in the museum in Stockholm, I get that question a lot from people that I'm talking to. And I can only find one proper answer to that, and that is chemistry between two persons. Björn and Benny met, and they have this Swedish folk music background together with the English pop and the American pop. And that together with these two guys' minds, musically and lyrics, just made it. I can't explain it in another way. It's not... It's not from a record company's side that someone gave them records or gave them money to start doing things. It's just four persons, two initially, and then added on with these two girls that sang so extremely well together. And that combined with the guy's music making was just sheer
magic.
And,
and 40 years later, Ing-Marie Halling, we're still celebrating here in Ireland, a good way away from Sweden, the singing and the music and the ABBA and the memories, everything that's so special about that group.
I've been so lucky. I'm the girl with golden hair. I want to sing it out to everybody. What a joy. What a life.
More memories from ABBA. Now, for Eurovision fans, we have some special news. As you know, Mooney is hosting a party on the night of the Eurovision Song Contest final, which takes place on the 10th of May next, 2014, almost exactly 2 months away. And the good news is Paul Harrington is going to come along and play on the evening. Paul Harrington joins me on the telephone line now. Good afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon, Marty. And that is great news, because I can tell you, I don't think I ever have played a gig on Eurovision night, because nobody ever rings you up and asks you. They always think you're busy.
And Paul, Olin said this to me upstairs. Is it 20 years since Rock and Roll Kids with Charlie?
Absolutely. On the 30th of April 1994, that was the fateful night. And of course, I'm ringing you from the Sugar Club in downtown Dublin today, where we're just preparing for a show this evening to celebrate 20 years of that song, if you know what I mean. It's kind of, myself and Charlie have probably worked together, you know, on and off, maybe one or two gigs a year over that 20 years. But, you know, we decided to come together to absolutely celebrate the durability and endurance of that song.
Well, what about ABBA, Paul Harrington? I mean, we're talking about it just as fans. Andy can talk, obviously, as a top-class musician. But what about a fellow Eurovision winner?
Well, you know, I mean, here's the thing. I remember obviously watching ABBA in 1974 and, of course, being elated and ecstatic with that amazing song, and never dreaming that 20 years later I'd be sitting on a Eurovision stage and performing and going on to win. So there's a number of ways of looking at this. You can look at it this way. How quickly 20 years goes by, you know, or it's 40 for them. But of course, I mean, the amazing combination, as you were talking about earlier, of the songwriting and the chemistry and the whole thing that is ABBA today and has been for 40 years is just it's amazing. It's just it's so enduring, kind of like the Beatles. You know, I was just you know, thinking about it about what makes them so successful as well. There's probably you're just asking that question earlier. There's, as was said, there are so many combinations, but something that is amazing is to take kind of rather complex songs and make them accessible. You know, they had these beautifully accessible melodies and connection with people and rhythms and things. And yet, you know, as a musician, you try and sit down and break them apart and try to learn one of those tunes. You figure out very quickly how difficult they are, you know.
And considering, you know, they were Swedish, their command of the English language and the lyrics was something special.
Incredible, absolutely incredible. I mean, you know, every song connects with everybody, somebody, or you know, so many people. And song after song after song, hit after hit after hit. It's phenomenal, you know. And I know Andy was saying that would there be any possibility of them getting back together again? I mean, if they did, they're probably such they have so much integrity, those four people, that they'd probably come back with a whole new load of material.
Probably. They're working on it now, Paul.
Absolutely, yeah, and they'll do the tour where it won't be the hits tour, you know.
Well, usually when we meet and you're at the piano and I'm in the back line, very back line of the chorus,
yeah.
What ABBA songs are you usually asked for? What's the most popular, do you think?
Well, you know, I never get for ABBA songs, but luckily every now and again, with Andy and the RTE Concert Orchestra, there's every now and again there is a Eurovision special show goes on in the concert hall, and it involves a lot of ABBA songs. There's a song I'd love to sing, and maybe my favourite is the name, but it's the one that starts "I Don't Want to Talk." You know that?
Oh yeah.
What's it called again? Winner Takes It All.
And
you know what? I never thought in my life I was ever going to hear a better version for me than ABBA in my life. But I did. For me, this is for me now. I listening to Meryl Streep doing a job on it. I don't know if you've heard her sing it.
I did. In the movie. Yeah.
I couldn't give you tuppence for the movie, but I thought her rendition of that was just breathtaking.
Well, Paul Harrington, you're gigging tonight. Is it tonight?
I am, yes. And we've a good crowd down tonight, Marty. Well, it's myself and Charlie stage at 8:30. We've got Sean Devitt, Bill Shanley, Finian Darby as our house band tonight. And Paddy Cole is going to join us on stage. Shay Healy is going to join us on stage. I know Eleanor Shanley is making her way down to do a few songs. It is rumoured that Rebecca Storm might drop in. And so we're going to have a party celebrating the old 20 years of Rock and Roll Kids.
Paul Harrington, always a pleasure to have you on The Mooney Show.
See you, Paul.
I don't want to talk about things we've gone through, though it's hurting me. Now it's history. I played all my cards, and that's what you've done too. Nothing more to say, no more ace to play. The winner takes it all, the loser standing small beside the victory.
Andy O'Callaghan, thank you very much for joining us on this
Marty.
Special programme about ABBA. You're tuned to The Mooney Show here on RT Radio 1, and since just about 3 o'clock, we've been reminiscing and going down memory lane and celebrating ABBA's 40th anniversary of winning the Eurovision Song Contest. And we've loads of texts coming in. I'll just get to some of them now. Hi, Marty. Memories of ABBA, Rotunda Hospital, 15th of June, 1975, giving birth to my first baby daughter, Leslie, to background sound of Waterloo. What memories? Claire Dunn and Clontarf. Marty, my favourite is Dancing Queen. It's the only song that I remember exactly where I was the first time I heard it. I was 14 years old and at a disco at St. Paul's School in Raheny called Club 74. Even though I was 1976, a girl beside me knew every word and I couldn't believe it because the record had only been released that day. Anyway, Marty, I still love it. It's got to be the top pop song of all time. That's from Angie Nolan in Dublin 13. Hi, Marty. I was in the Bus Aris building on that same evening in May 1974. I worked in the Department of Social Welfare at the time and was waiting in the front hall for my then boyfriend to pick me up. I remember that the whole building shook and everyone ran out onto the road. Then we saw the smoke from Talbot Street and people running. It was, to say the least, the most frightening experience of my life, and I was extremely nervous in town for a long time after. That's from Marie. That's reflecting back on the Dublin bombs, from Andy O'Callaghan's memories. And I remember Waterloo well, Marty, the same week Dennis Law backheeled a goal for City to sink United, Mike and Cork. There's one sports fan there. Well, the good news is Dear McGavin is coming your way in just a moment after this.